Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity, and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, and the Chief Learning Officer at Novartis. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by Francesca Gino. Francesca is the Tandon Family Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School, as well as being author of the best-selling books Rebel Talent, Why It Pays to Break the Rules at Work and in Life, and Sidetracked, Why Our Decisions Get Derailed and How We Can Stick to the Plan. She's been honoured as one of the world's top 40 business professors under 40 and one of the world's 50 most influential management thinkers by Thinkers 50, as well as picking up numerous awards and having her studies published in leading publications such as The Economist, The New York Times, Newsweek, Psychology Today and The Wall Street Journal. It's an honour to welcome you to the Curious Advantage podcast, Francesca.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure to have you here. I've got to start by saying that I've been really looking forward to this episode. I must confess to being a bit of a fan of your work. I've had your Harvard article on the business case for curiosity sat on my desk for the last 2 years, and I still use it in many, if not all, of the presentations that I give. And I've got to say, it was actually one of the inspirations that actually gave me the confidence to start thinking to write The Curious Advantage in the first place. So thank you.
It was such a pleasure to write the article, but you're making me feel almost embarrassed. Thank you for the compliment.
No, not at all. I see that you got interested in curiosity and learning a long time ago. I found a paper of yours from 2008 that was co-written with Amy Edmondson, coincidentally now the Novartis Professor of Management and Leadership at Harvard. So let's start with, what was it that first got you interested in this area of study?
I spent a lot of my time in organizations looking at how leaders and employees do their work. And years ago, I started going into organizations with a little bit of a strange set of eyes, where I would go in and try to pay attention to processes, systems, ways of working that, to the eyes of a person who didn't work there, made very little sense. And then I would go and ask people, why is it that you do things this way? And the answer was always the same. We've always done it this way. And it's just a rather curious answer, because at the same time, leaders are out there saying that they want their organizations to be innovative, to find their competitive edge, to keep on learning. And so these very practices and this way of thinking seems very much in contrast with that. So I wanted to understand, why is it that that happens? But also, let's look at organizations where the leaders and the employees have, in fact, a different mindset. They're all for learning and they're all for retaining curiosity.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned curiosity, because I'm interested in what you think curiosity and its role in the company is, and specifically, what's the value of curiosity in your perspective?
Curiosity, I think, is that type of mindset that allows us to go to existing practices or usual ways of working and looking at them and say, but what if we were to do things differently? I think curiosity, it's a really important ingredient that is needed in order for all of us not to become complacent. I'm the mom of four little kids, and so I feel like I'm in the land of curiosity since they're all quite smalls. But it's interesting to look at their approach to the world. It's constant experimenting. They keep on asking questions. And every time I feel like I gave them a good answer, there is another question popping into their head. And what's fascinating and also a little bit sad is that we're all born with a lot of curiosity, But then it tends to disappear as we grow older. And I think that is not only sad, but it's bad, especially when thinking about organizations, because curiosity is the thing that gets us to avoid complacency, to keep on learning and staying and be innovative.
I think some of the research certainly shows, I think at 4 years old, you're at your most curious in your life, and then it starts to go down from there. So why is being curious more important for companies and organizations today, maybe, than it has been in the past? What do you think?
If I think about the environment that we're all facing today and that organizations are operating in, is an environment that is very uncertain, mm-hmm. where there is a lot of a great need and desire, actually, to adapt and stay agile. In fact, agility is one of the words that I hear constantly when talking to leaders and employees in organizations. And curiosity helps us adapt more quickly or not get too stuck in the current ways of working. And so when I think about a world that keeps on changing, and that presents us with all sorts of complex problems, then we really need curiosity, and organizations need a lot of curiosity in order to adapt.
Francesca, in your recent interview with Michael Wong, you referenced a study on the value leaders place on curiosity and how you've since reviewed this to see the impact the pandemic has had, speaking of a world in a state of change. Can you tell us more about this?
Absolutely. I was struck by the fact that when I collected data on thousands of leaders and employees across the world, it seems as if most of these people, and in fact, most of us, understand the value of curiosity when it comes to crediting curious people with coming up with new ideas into their teams or organizations, or really understanding that curiosity is the catalyst for all sorts of good things, including more innovation, more motivation, more job satisfactions. We see all of that. And in fact, again, if I go back to the data, I think it was 92% of those who responded telling me that curiosity is important for all of these organizationally relevant outcomes. But then if you actually look at how often people feel curious in the work that they do, the data is pretty drastically different. So only a minority of people, about 20% of them, tell you that they're curious in their jobs. The pandemic has made that worse. So when I collected the data during the pandemic, it seems as if we're now down to 15%. And wow. What's tragic about it, and I'm really using a strong word here, is that I also have data that suggests that employees and leaders who have been able to hold on to a curious mindset during the crisis actually fared better. They experienced less burnout, they experienced less stress, they were able to connect with their colleagues in a more meaningful way. They were also better able to adjust to their new routines or ways of working. And so I find it quite striking that we recognize the importance of curiosity, and yet we don't experience it as often at work, especially in moments where it would be most valuable to us, like the moment of crisis we're living through now.
So immediately you've made me curious. You mentioned leaders who had a curious mindset, I guess against leaders who didn't have a curious mindset. What is a curious mindset? Have you got some examples of what that actually is?
Absolutely. Especially in this time of crisis, what the curious mindset allows you to do is to see the opportunity, despite the fact that, again, we're in a moment of difficulties and challenges. But rather than focusing your attention on those challenges, you think about, how could I use this moment to do something different? To rethink my work, to rethink my routines, to think about ways of working that I was relying on that weren't that helpful or useful. Let me rethink them or reinvent them. And what's interesting about some of the data that I collected during the pandemic is that leaders have an important role to play. In fact, when leaders are the first to rely on this type of curious mindset, that is very contagious. And so the employees are likely to do so also. And so are you the first one to ask, what if, or how could we? That becomes really contagious.
There's been a huge pivot, you know, for so many organizations during the pandemic to go digital and to shift their businesses to virtual. Whether that remains after post-pandemic or whether there'll be a hybrid that emerges, we don't know yet. But certainly digital and running organizations digitally and virtually has been the thing that's kept many organizations and people alive. You have suggestions for how leaders can foster curiosity in their organizations. And could I extend that to, do you have any suggestions for how leaders should be fostering curiosity in their digital organizations now?
Absolutely. One of the clear differences among the leaders, we in fact showed curiosity and a curious mindset over the last year now, and those who did not, is leader who came into this virtual environment saying, okay, maybe it's not what we would choose to be doing because we agree that we'd rather be together in the same room having these conversations. But what it is that we're learning that could be helpful to us whenever we go back to the next chapter. So their leaders were asking a lot of questions and having conversation, showing interest in paying attention not only to the constraining world of virtual, but again, the opportunities that it offers. I think often about a really, in my mind, cute example that comes from a very different context, but it gives me an idea of what the reframing is all about. And it's an example that I shared in my book, Rebel Talent, and it's about a restaurant, which is a Michelin star restaurant. In fact, they have 3 Michelin star. And it's a restaurant that in 2016 became the best restaurant in the world. It's in Modena, Italy. It's called Osteria Francescana. But the story is about the sous chef working in the kitchen, one of the 2 sous chefs, who's Japanese, named Taka, and is known in the restaurant for being obsessed with attention to detail. So on a very busy night, he was working on the last dessert of the night. It was a lemon tart. So he was carefully arranging all the pieces on the plate. And all of a sudden, the tart dropped to the floor. So now you had to smash the lemon tart. And in the very moment in which he was starting to experience a little bit of anxiety, since these are expensive desserts, you had the chef and owner, Massimo Bottura, walked into the kitchen, seeing the plate on the floor. And I have to tell you, having visited a lot of fancy restaurants, I should also clarify for research purposes, a lot of the leaders would have just yelled at him, at Taka, but Bottura didn't. Looked at the plate on the floor and then looked at Taka and said, Taka, I think we have a new idea for a new dessert. And sure enough, they come up with a new dessert. It's a deconstructed lemon tart. And I love the name for it on the menu, which is Oops, I Dropped the Lemon Tart.
Did they still make it the same way?
Yeah, exactly. But that's curiosity, right? You're looking at an accident, you're looking at a mistake, and rather than being upset or focusing on what just happened that is constraining or things are not going according to plan, you focus on the what if. What could this be? That is a curious mindset.
And I guess that's an element of curiosity there driving innovation, which I know that linkage is one that you've explored in your research. And I think you did one where you were using text messages to drive curiosity. You had a control group. Can you tell us more around that experiment or that research that you did?
Absolutely. That is a research project I'm very proud of. It took years to be realized, but it's a project with a large Canadian bank. And what the leaders at the bank were interested in is to understand how they could drive more easiness in people's careers movement inside the firm. And we had some work, we had done some work with them in the past where we just surveyed individuals and found that when we were to predict performance, when we were to predict how fluid career movements were, when we were to predict how collaboration happened, the best predictor was not anything related to a personality trait, was actually curiosity. Mm-hmm. And so the bank looked at the results. They were happy with what we found. But then they came back to us with almost a little bit of desperation in their faces saying, well, we're a bank, possibly not the organization that has the tasks that are the most innovative or that raise curiosity. And so they asked us whether we could help them raise curiosity in the moment. And so we decided to run an intervention where for 3 weeks, people in the bank received emails twice a week. And we were asking something very simple. We were asking them to ask why or what if more often throughout the day. And what we found by looking at their email communication is that people who received such messages as compared to people who didn't receive any messages, but also compared to people who received neutral messages, that their way of collaborating with others in the organization changed. So they were more likely to network with the people across their functions, across their groups, in a way that truly benefited them for support that they needed or for their own performance. And so what I love about that is the fact that, yes, we're all born curious. We might lose some of our curiosity or a large chunk of our curiosity over time, but there are things that we can do to encourage it, to foster it in any organization.
This is fascinating. We are so interested in what's the infrastructure and what's the things that you can do to enable a culture of curiosity amongst your people, and trying to do a lot of work on that at the moment, including, I mean, we were looking at research on innovation backed by some INSEAD research with Spencer Harrison. And in fact, he's also a guest on the podcast. And he mentioned some of your research about playing a guitar backwards. You have to tell us about how that links to curiosity.
Absolutely. I was struck, and you can bring some of your own experience forward, but I was struck by the fact that often leaders I met saw their expertise and experience as a sign that they know it all. And so in a sense, this expertise fueled a sense of confidence that didn't allow them to stay open-minded and curious when they faced novel situations. I had conducted some work using data actually from surgeries conducted in the United States. And to simplify a very complex project, what we found was that after the FDA came out with an announcement to suggest that a specific technology was bad for patients when used in the surgery, the surgeon who were the least likely to change their behavior in light of this announcement were actually the more experienced surgeons. And it's something that we found in other contexts as well, where again, experience and expertise were being used as a signal that you're the expert, there is nothing left to learn. And so with my colleagues, we were trying to think about how is it that, especially when people are very experienced, they can embrace that curious mindset. And one of the studies that a colleague of mine conducted, which I think was really ingenious, was by asking expert guitar players to turn around their guitars such that they had the feelings of what it meant to play the guitar when they were novices. And when you have that experience, it's hard to remember what we were thinking or what we were doing when we didn't have that experience. And so playing the guitar backwards was a way of recreating that sense of being a novice. Very, very powerful.
We had Erica Anderson on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she wrote the book Be Bad First, and exactly that principle that a leader should be leading the way by demonstrating actually that they can get it wrong, that, you know, that there's new things for us all to learn, and it starts off uncomfortable, and yeah, that as a leader actually role modeling and showing that we don't know the answers, and actually we can go through that learning journey is hugely powerful. So
absolutely, and difficult to do, right? That often we are the ones, especially when we have a lot of experience and expertise under our belt, to recognize that we just don't know. One of the recent studies that I conducted with actually Spencer Harrison and another colleague on curiosity is one where we find that if you look at curiosity as a trait and you correlate with the amount of expertise and experience, the two are negative correlated, which means that the more experience and expertise you have under your belt, the less curious you are. That's again, I look at this data and say, that's a sad and what a missed opportunity. And so how can we be sure that we inject, again, the curious mindset even into people who have a lot of expertise and experience?
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
It's very interesting what you say about, you know, the older we get and the more fixed in our ideas we get, or the more we're in a particular framework where we may feel safe, the less likely we are to go out or even question. And the old way of leadership, which I think is changing rapidly, is that you got to know more and more, you knew the context, and you became the expert. And that no longer works in the hyper-connected world that we live in today, especially digitally. And the other thing that's so fascinating about getting outside of your framework, or getting into, you know, getting used to be feeling a little bit humble or unsafe and asking curious questions, is the way it impacts you as a leader and how it has an impact on how you communicate with everybody and connect to everybody. It's absolutely fascinating. That thing about when you're in a framework and a particular context, which you may think you're an expert in, you also cannot see new things because you don't have the language and you're not open to things that may be going on around you. So you could suggest it's also dangerous for leadership.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the examples that stood out to me as an example that speaks to the power of experience with humility so that you stay curious is the example of Captain Sally Sullenberger. He is the person who back on a cold evening in 2009 ditched a plane with 155 passengers in the Hudson River. And what people might not know, despite the fact that this flight became famous across the globe as the Miracle on the Hudson, is that Captain Sally Sullenberger had 208 seconds to make a decision. That, I think, is the definition of having very little time.
Amazing.
And yet, yeah, and if you were to read the transcripts from the conversation as it was happening within those 208 seconds, you would see that he didn't go to the most obvious answer. He didn't go to the answer of the question, what should I do? He kept considering alternatives. He was eliminating them rather quickly, but he kept considering alternatives. And it was such a powerful example that I have to confess is one of those times where I used the Harvard Business School card. So I wrote to him an email out of the blue because I really wanted to understand what was behind it. And what I discovered in talking to him is that clearly he was an expert by the time the accident happened. A lot of experience under his belt. But he had created this beautiful habit of mind for himself where every time he walked into the cockpit, he would ask the question, what do I stand to learn today? How is it that today's flight could be different? And so, Garrick, I think that is exactly this idea of acquiring and gaining experience, but also holding on to your humility. It's just beautiful. That allows us to stay curious and keep on learning.
Beautiful.
And I think, Francesca, you're also talking about constraints. So we talk about sort of how constraints drive innovation, but in these stories, it seems that constraints also help keep you curious. I know this applies in sports. I do a lot of martial arts myself. And one of the things you do repetitively is the cutters. And after doing it for 20 years, you can become very experienced, but you lose your edge in doing it. And one of the disciplines they ask us to do is to tie your hands behind your back or to do it backwards. And the most experienced people cannot do this. It's fascinating how putting those sorts of constraints in place drive a different way of thinking. And I suppose it's about approaching it then with a curious mindset.
I love that. It's a great example of, again, putting you in an uncomfortable space such that you get to ask questions or look at the situations differently. And that's when curiosity pops back up.
Exactly. Going back to your article, The Business Case for Curiosity, you identified a wide range of benefits of curiosity. And we've been talking about some of these. But for example, reduced group conflict and more open communication. Having just finished the latest version of lockdown homeschooling, I can attest to some of those emotions. Can you tell us a bit more about the benefits of being curious and where you've seen this in practice?
Absolutely. One of the ways in which I've explored curiosity is in situations where you're collaborating with others. And what is interesting is that, as we all know, sometimes collaborations get difficult because we are disagreeing with our team members, we don't see eye to eye. And what's interesting is that when curiosity is present, you approach those disagreements differently. You don't start thinking that Simon is clearly not as committed to the cause. What you do think is that you want to explore why is it that he's looking at the problem so differently from you. And so that curiosity turns into asking questions, exploring, the desire to understand in a way that reduces group conflict, but also allows for more information being shared in a way that leads to better decisions within the team and also better performance. And so that is, to me, really good reasons in collaborations to open up to curiosity. More recently, I've also looked at how we can use curiosity when reaching out to others. So, for example, you're interested in information that a colleague in another function has in the organization, and reaching out with curiosity means going to them by saying, I wonder, or I'm curious about. And what we find is that when we use that approach in our networking, we are perceived to be less instrumental. And so as we nurture or create new relationships at work, curiosity can help us there also, because once the relationship is perceived to be less of an instrumental one, people are more ready to support us, to mentor us, or to help us if need be.
Wow. So it helps reduce conflict, improves your communication, means people are more amenable to you. Lots of benefits. We also, in our research, found that there's a link between curiosity and actually the learning process as well. So University of California, I think, did research to show how if you invoke curiosity when you're learning, it creates stronger memories and things. Loads of benefits there. I mean, did you come across other benefits as well for individuals through your research?
What I also found is that when it comes to fighting some biases, some of which seems to be particularly important in the world that we live right now, for example, having stereotypical judgments or engaging in behavior that are perceived as unfair or even discriminatory, that curious people are less likely to engage in those biases and in those behaviors. And again, it's due to the fact that curiosity comes with this desire to learn, wanting to explore, and also asking more questions. And that seems to be a really important individual benefit.
Yeah, we love that.
Important at the moment as well. Yes.
Yeah. For me, it was a huge aha when we were doing our research, coming to an understanding about the role of bias and criticality and how you can teach that, and being aware of the biases. We talk about it in one of the chapters of the book, and there's a very nice diagram by Buster Benson of 192 of the configured psychologies of bias that we can be aware of. But just to be aware of these filters, and I sometimes think, we've got to put criticality and an awareness of bias on the MBA programs and on leadership programs, because it's and school programs, because it's so important to allow us to explore new things and not go down routes that we want to explore, which are informed by our own biases or just kind of reinforce what we know already. I mean, it's such a powerful point you make there. I have a very technical question for you, Francesca, very specific. Mm-hmm. And that is, what's your definition of curiosity?
Very good question and an important one. Curiosity, and I'm going to stay very close to the way the academic literature has talked about it, is all about this desire to wanting to know. And you're looking for information not only because the information is helpful in some way to your work or to your situations, but because you're really eager to find out, to have that moment of discovery. That's how I think of it.
Very good. You mentioned one aspect of curiosity earlier around sort of questions. We recently had Lisa Bodell on the podcast. She's author of the book Kill the Company, and she talks a lot about killer questions. And I know you also talk about how leaders should teach employees to ask great questions. So why do you think so many people and so many organizations find it hard to ask good questions, and what can we do to do it better?
Many years ago, I had what I thought was a really brilliant idea at Christmas time for the type of present that I bought for my husband, and he's into technology, so you always love when you buy him whatever latest piece of technology is on the market. But what I bought him instead was signing us up for a 10-week class, 2 hours a week in improv comedy. Wow. Now, I have to tell you that he kind of didn't like it at the beginning.
I can imagine he wanted the big telly or the new computer.
Yeah, that scored much higher in his wish list. But it's interesting that his attitude is actually starting to change as we went to the course every week. And I'm mentioning this because it was quite a transformational experience, especially in thinking about some of the themes in our discussions. And one of the philosophies that improv comedy left me with is the motto that curiosity and judgment can't coexist. Wow. That is actually quite profound. If you bring it back into our life, if you bring it back into leadership, if you bring it back into organizations, one of the main reasons why so many people, so many organizations stop asking questions is because of that fear of judgment. I ask, and I'm sure that you're going to roll your eyes, or you're going to think that the question is stupid or that it's irrelevant. And so I stay silent. I think that that's the barrier to overcome. And in fact, even when you go back to why is it that children at an early age ask questions constantly, and some of the questions are funny or silly. I think my three-year-old recently asked me, why is it that we need to wear clothes when we leave the house? It's because they come from the eyes of a little person who is not focused on the impression that he's making on others. He's coming from that sense of awe and wonder.
Mm. And is that why, and we made the link earlier to your work with Amy Edmondson, but is that why psychological safety is also so important, and why you need it there to be curious, but also being curious helps to create that psychological safety?
Absolutely. And in fact, in some of the new research that my colleagues and I conducted, we see that link quite clearly, that when you encourage more curiosity in a team or in a collaboration, you also fundamentally influence psychological safety, and it's a self-reinforcing process.
Your most recent book is called Rebel Talent. Is there a link between rebels and curiosity?
Absolutely. One of the rebel superpowers is being curious. In the book, I talk about these people who create positive change. They're not people who break the rules just for the sake of breaking rules. They break the rules that hold them and others back in a way that is really positive and constructive. And one of the things that they share, no matter where you find them, whether in a very innovative organization or a call center in India, is that they're quite curious. They keep asking questions, they experiment, and they treat their failures differently. They're part of the process of learning rather than something to be ashamed of. One of the rebels that I talk a lot about in the book is Chef Massimo Bottura. One of the things that he said that to me, again, speaks to his curiosity is that he says that traditions are a well-received experiment. He was the person who went to traditional Italian dishes and reinvented them. He came up with very innovative spins on this traditional Italian dishes. But let's think about that. Traditions are well-received experiments. That means that they're there to be rebuilt. You need to be coming to these traditional Italian dishes with a lot of curiosity and questions. So yes, absolutely, the two are quite linked. And I would say that curiosity is actually the superpower of the rebels.
I love that. Curiosity is the superpower of the rebels. I have one more question. What are you personally curious about at the moment?
So the truthful answer is a personal one. I am very much curious to see how leaders and organizations are going to approach whatever it is that is next. And the worry that I have is that we've discovered all sorts of new ways of working, some of which are actually better than our previous routines, but just for nostalgia, we go back to what we were doing before. And so I'm sort of hoping that we're truly not going to waste a lot of the learning or a lot of what we discovered in the last year. How about you three? What are you curious about?
Personally, I'm curious about what's outside my town in the world. I'm sure there's a world out there. I keep seeing it on Zoom. And I think also what's going to be the next normal, as you say, what is going to come next?
I'm reading a book about quantum theory because I'm a geek and I'm very, very interested. I'm a musician as well, but I'm very interested in resonance and the impact that attitudes that we have can have it within the field, if you know what I mean. So that's my current bedtime reading.
I think for me, I'm curious about how we get the message out about curiosity, because we've had so many rich discussions on here, and I think you're probably the third person who's talked about curiosity as a superpower. And yet it's not well recognized out there, the opportunity that it can present, the value that is there. So I'm curious how we get that message out wider. So with that, maybe one sort of closing one, we've covered so many great things in such a short time, but what would be the one thing our listeners maybe should take away, Francesca, around our conversation today?
I would say not to take curiosity as a given, but being more curious about curiosity. What I mean about that is recognizing that if we don't stay on top of it, it's easy for curiosity to be shut down. And so let's think more carefully on a day-to-day basis. What are the questions that we could be asking? What are the usual ways of working that we are taking for granted that deserve to be questioned? And what is our role in modeling curiosity for others? If we are the first to ask, I think that we're going to have a contagious effect in the way we affect others.
So some actions there for our listeners. Be more curious about curiosity and ask more questions and look at the opportunities that the way things are today presents. So, Francesca, thank you so much.
It's been
a fantastic conversation.
You. Absolutely brilliant.
It was such a pleasure to talk to you three. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So you've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide. Order your copy now to further explore the 7Cs model for being more curious. Join the conversation at #CuriousAdvantage and subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.